How was a man with 10% of a brain able to function normally? What did 16th century Arctic explorers eat that made their skin fall off? Why did Columbus think the Earth had a nipple like a breast? Learn the history behind these stories and well over 100 more in my new book, Facts That Aren't True. Check out my other book too, link in the description.
You know, there's certain processes that are very not, I guess, conserved, that have been used for a long time, and also like the idea of, oh, you know, things like the things that are like happening come from a very low chance. Like life came from a very a multi-series like sequence of things happening that were extremely rare and had to be like perfect, right? You know, like
Definitely not perfect, but I can believe that it's uncommon.
Right. Like the fine tune. I don't know what that theory is. Like the fine tuning of the universe or whatever, like the gravity and whatnot.
I think fine tuning is some unremarkable bullshit. But
I'll ask that question why in a second. But
sure.
When I see those things, I like to think, you know what? It's not exactly intellectually dishonest to say that has to come from, you know, a creator that goes beyond our bounds of comprehension, one that's all-knowing, one that's omnipresent. I think that's not really illogical to believe, you know?
It may not exactly be illogical. I think it's kind of, well, it sounds kind of incoherent, if you ask me. What the hell does it mean to be any of those things? Because, like, the way... And now we're just getting into apologetics. We're not talking about specific... We're not talking about general theism. We're talking about Christian theology in this example. But I don't really know how else to do it. Because, like, for example, somebody will say, God is all-knowing. And then somebody will point to a place in the Bible where God doesn't know something, and then they'll have a response, well, omniscient doesn't mean knowing everything. It means knowing everything there is to be known. So they just twist themselves in these ridiculous knots to retrofit an explanation into a conclusion, which is just not honest.
And, that was a good point. And then I forgot it was on the
fine-tuning stuff?
Right, yes, fine-tuning. Why is that BS in your mind?
Oh, man, for so many reasons. So, for crying out loud. I made a pretty long, detailed video about this, and the problem is I bring up like 8 things, and I can only ever remember like 3 or 4 of them. I should just keep a document so I have all of them in bullet points to remember. But one issue with it is sort of the circularity of it. We can adopt the anthropic principle. Is this universe finely tuned for life? Well, we exist in it. We make observations, so it looks like it is, therefore it is. I mean, that's very circular. And you can just point out that any possible unit, like imagine that the universe is different in some way or in many ways, it doesn't matter, but there are things that can observe the universe. The only conclusion they can draw is that this universe has the property of being observable. Now what you have to do is kind of beg the question and assume the mind of God and say things like, and people approach fine tuning in many different ways. They say it's finely tuned to allow life to exist, which there are problems with that we can talk about, like the complete false talking point of a Goldilocks zone or whatever. Or they say it's finely tuned for intelligent life, but the anthropic principle, I think, deals with that. But the other thing they try to do is they say, and God made these constants the way they are so that the universe would be the way it is because he wants to have a relationship with us. Now you are ascribing on your own accord what the intentions of the arbiter of the universe are, which is just so incredibly self-centered and I think dishonest. But it makes this other, it's myopic in this sense too, because the constants in our universe,
right,
it's not like human beings are subject to them and everything else in the universe is subject to different kinds of constants or something like that. Absolutely not. No, the constants that govern the existence of intelligent life are the exact same constants that govern the properties of black holes. And there's absolutely no logical problem in saying that the universe is finely tuned for black holes, and there's no logical problem in imagining a god that created the universe with the intention of creating black holes because that's what it desires. That is, there's, and so now we get to this point of sort of the epistemological disutility of these metaphysical claims, which is, which of those is better? Well, of course, a human being is going to intrinsically or intuitively think that theism in a personal relationship with us is better because that's where our fifis go, you know? So there's several problems right there. The other major problem, and I'll just say it quickly so that I'm not filibustering, is I think that fine-tuning gets you nowhere beyond deism. I don't think it says anything for theism in particular.
Right. Okay. So hold on one second. I can totally understand that. Like, when you think of it in the grand scheme of things, you could make the argument that a lot of other processes were made to, or in a fine-tuned environment. The problem I have with that, though, is that I feel like we're being disingenuous to the fact that life, compared to other processes or other concepts, has a lot of innate value and meaning in it. And we would attribute that to something incredible, like, you know, the chance of life for human life being formed, which is like 1 to 400 trillion. I don't know the exact number, but.
Well, I don't know how people calculate those, but don't you kind of see that this is just a bias? Like, if I said human beings are a scourge to not only the planet, but the universe, and it's really unfortunate that we exist. That doesn't sound like, what do you think that sounds like?
That it's unfortunate?
Yeah, like it doesn't really seem rational. It doesn't exactly seem grounded. Now, I could make the argument for it. Like, literally, not a single thing about our planet is better because we exist. They would all be better if we didn't exist, which is a really gross kind of realization, I feel like. And I'm not an anti-humanist or anything. It just kind of is true. Now, but despite that, I'm a person and I like being alive and I'm not an antinatalist. Right. And so we privilege ourselves based on the fact that we are self-interested.
Yeah, I can see that, in that you could argue that that specific self-interest, that like that downfall of our human nature, is what makes the planet better off without us. But besides that, and I guess I'm making a specific bias to humans, but I guess life in general is incredible, and a planet with life would, I guess, be valued to a higher extent because I'm a, you know, just the experience of existing and being alive is, I guess, more unique than not, if that makes sense.
There is nothing illogical or wrong with a human thinking that being a human is the gosh darned greatest thing ever. But when you extrapolate beyond that and say, and that's the reason the universe exists, now it's like, you've taken the world revolves around you and ran with that to the most extreme logical conclusion or whatever that you can. The other thing about life, like life in the universe and the constants being fine-tuned for life or whatever, well, the finely tuned constants aren't miraculous. They're just physical. They're
right.
You could call them material in a weird sort of sense. But So there's no miracle at work at all anywhere in this universe. And but if those constants are finely tuned for life, then that makes life an inevitable consequence of the universe. And none of this is miraculous, which means it completely dismisses the requirement for a God to exist to explain why life exists. The only actual thing that the God is sold to us as being the necessary condition for is the creation of the universe with those constants. And then this is what I was saying earlier. That's just deism. That's not theism. So, like, the fine-tuning argument constructs a universe that's completely indistinguishable from a universe where God doesn't exist. Which I think is... it's a bold strategy, Cotton. We'll see if it pans out for them. I don't know if I got that quote verbatim or not.
Right, yeah. I wanted to go back to the point of, like, things being miraculous or not. Like, I think the idea that you and I and everyone else watching and whatnot being alive is a pretty miraculous thing. Like, I don't feel like it would be a bold statement to make that claim, or a bold statement to make. Right.
I do. I mean, so have you ever heard of how big of a number 52 factorial is?
Oh, yeah. That's like, yeah, mind-boggling.
There aren't enough atoms in the universe to assign each... the number you get, you couldn't count the number of atoms in the observable universe with it. There aren't enough of them, I mean. Now, does that mean that the particular arrangement of cards in a deck is a miracle? No. Even though we're dealing with a number that is unthinkably vast or whatever. The particular odds of any deck of cards being arranged the way it is just monumentally absurd. But there's no miracle taking place, and it's unmiraculous the way it got there, and it's reducible to just a physical description. I think life is like that, because what people tend to do when they give you these calculations for the odds that a human would ever exist, they'll just do some back of the napkin, like, oh well, when a guy skeets into a woman, there's like 100 million sperm, so the odds are 1 in 100 million that you exist, because it could have been any of the other ones. But also, half of pregnancies spontaneously abort, so now we got to double it. And then they do, maybe they'll like add together the treacherous first year of life, because you actually, the odds of death in your first year of life are actually as high as they are until you're like in your 50s or something like that. It's actually pretty crazy. So they do stuff like that, or they'll try to attack it from like a biological level, and they'll say, well, you know, a protein will have 20,000 amino acids in it, and there are 20 amino acids, so 2,000 to the 20th power, that's the odds that protein would form. And so therefore it has to be a miracle. It's like, no, biochemically that's completely false in so many ways, because it completely discounts gradualism, it completely discounts natural selection, it completely discounts the redundancy and all kinds of other things. So these calculations are really, really dubious for a lot of reasons.
Okay, sure. So then I guess, let's say, okay, so then the religious understanding of, or not even theist or deist understanding of life is inherently philetical. Let's say I'll just like concede to that point. Do you think then
Wait, sorry, what word did you use there?
Not political. It's just like there's a misunderstanding of it, I guess is what I meant to say.
Okay, sure.
Yeah, sorry. I don't know. I just made up a word. Anyways, but could you say that the empirical understanding of life could have its limitations or misunderstandings, or not so much? compared to theism.
I don't know what you mean. Is there a scientific limit to what we can know about life?
Yes. Yes. Or is there more to learn?
I don't. So, like, in a weird sort of way, I don't think in principle there is, but in practice there certainly is.
So, can you expand? I'm sorry.
Like history, right? We'll never know. It's literally unknowable what color Buddha's eyes were. But it's in principle knowable, right? That's what I mean. So, life, I take the view that there's no miracle going on with life, and there historically never was either. And so I don't see a limit to science. Like, I don't see an incompleteness theorem in science when it comes to trying to study how life works. So, like, in principle, I don't see a limitation, but in practice, there almost certainly would be. Now, you could argue that maybe, I don't know, something about emergent properties, maybe like with consciousness within living things, is completely maybe outside the scope of real science. Perhaps a quantum computer could do it, and is that science? Maybe, maybe not. I don't really know. Or maybe there's this sort of weird, in a weird sort of sense, you could never scientifically grasp, like, the meta knowledge about biology, like what we know about what we know and how we know what we know what we know, or something like that. So I don't know. That's my best attempt to kind of address it.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, I think, you know, like, sorry, my voice. The saying, you know, it's an evolving science, I think, is really true. When you talk about, like, certain branches of it, like with astronomy or with, you know, physics and whatnot, like, you can correct me on, like, the study, you're fine, but there was, like, a planet that was, like, 14 billion years old, which is, like, older than the beginning of the universe or whatever, and that kind of...
That's a star, the Methuselah star. I've looked into that a couple times, and I always forget what the explanation for that is. I can never remember.
Yeah, but I think it really doesn't matter ideologically how you see it. It's really interesting attempt on how to understand things, and, you know, everything's evolving as we go, right? So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but yeah, this is a good convo. I might come back up sometime soon, maybe, because this is a good conversation. But yeah, I've seen your content. It's pretty cool. So.
Okay. Yeah, no problem.